Coming up on Tech News Today, Twitter lets you download your tweets, Facebook taking on Snapchat. What's Snapchat? Also, HTC bails on a big phone. Why is that? All that and more coming up.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Tech News Today for Monday, December 17th, 2012. Tech News Today is brought to you by GoToAssist by Citrix. Take control of your IT world from one simple cloud-based platform. Provide live or unattended support to all your users from anywhere. Sign up for your 30-day free trial today. Visit GoToAssist.com and use promo code TNT. And by ShareFile. Enhance your workflow, send files of almost any size easily and securely with ShareFile by Citrix. Try ShareFile today. For a 30-day free trial, go to ShareFile.com, click the radio microphone, and enter TNT. And by Audible.com. To download a free audiobook of your choice, go to audiblepodcast.com/TNT and get a copy of Brandon Sanderson's Legion absolutely free at audible.com/Sanderson. Welcome to Tech News Today. I'm Tom Merritt.
I'm Sarah Lane.
I'm Aya Zaktar.
And I'm Jason Howell.
And this is the show where we keep you up to date on the most important stories in the tech world, put them in context for you, starting each time with the top 10 stories of the day in the news feeds. Analysts were pessimistic about the potential success of the iPhone 5 in China, but weekend sales of more than 2 million have changed their minds. Atlantic Equity's James Cordwell noted that the weekend total of 2 million would be 10% of the entire fiscal year of shipments to China by Apple, as estimated by IDC.
HTC is apparently dropping plans for a big-screen Windows Phone 8 phone, which would have competed with Android devices with large displays like HTC's own Droid DNA. So what's the reason? Well, according to Bloomberg, it's the lack of high-resolution screen support in Windows Phone 8 because the mobile OS only offers up to 720p resolution, and big-screen devices are mostly now at 1080p or higher.
All Things D reports Facebook is working on its own Snapchat competitor app. Snapchat lets users send messages to each other that self-destruct after a period of time. Facebook's app would offer similar functionality and is expected to launch before the end of the year.
Snapchat competitor app. Nielsen and Twitter announced plans to launch an engagement rating for TV shows based on Twitter usage. The new metric will complement Nielsen's existing TV ratings, gauging the reach of the TV conversation on Twitter, and is slated for commercial availability at the start of the fall 2013 TV season.
Cisco Systems wants to sell off its Linksys wireless router unit and has hired Barclays to find a buyer. This is, again, according to Bloomberg, which cites people familiar with the situation. Back in 2003, Cisco acquired Linksys for $500 million, and although Linksys is a recognized brand with well-known and used technology, the new sale price could be a lot lower than what Cisco originally paid.
According to reports from Politico and the Wall Street Journal, the FTC antitrust investigation into Google won't have a major impact on Google. Under a deal that is not yet confirmed, the company would agree to make some voluntary changes, like making it easier for AdWords campaigns to be transferred to other platforms. Google would also settle with the FTC over patents it picked up from Motorola, whereby Google would not use key patents to block competitors infringing those patents from getting their products to the market.
In August, Instagram CEO Kevin Systrom told the California Corporations Department that Instagram had received no formal offers or term sheets prior to the $1 billion bid from Facebook. Nick Bilton of the New York Times reports that Twitter offered $525 million to Instagram several weeks prior to the Facebook announcement, and Systrom turned the offer down. No complaints have been filed with the California Corporations Department, but it may shed some light on this little API fight going on between Instagram and Twitter.
Speaking of Twitter, Twitter CEO Dick Costolo promised that users would be able to download an archive of all their tweets from their accounts by the end of this year. And some people have the feature already. If you're one of the lucky few, it's an option at the bottom of your settings page. At that point, Twitter will mail a download link as a zip file with an archive in HTML form.
The small but mighty Raspberry Pi has joined the ranks of platforms with its own app store. 23 titles kick off the store, some for free, some for money, and some with a tip jar. Raspberry Pi OS users can download and upload content at store.raspberrypi.com.
Remember that report last week where Sprint would buy Clearwire for $2.1 billion? Well, it was super wrong. Sprint signed a deal today to buy Clearwire for $2.2 billion. Thanks to the deal, Sprint would get more spectrum, which ought to help out its LTE rollout. The deal should close in mid-2013, pending approvals from regulatory agencies, shareholders of Clearwire, and if the Sprint-SoftBank deal is executed. But after all that, Sprint would own Clearwire.
This episode of Tech News Today brought to you by Citrix, makers of GoToAssist at GoToAssist.com. This is the time of year everybody's taking time off. I was at the airport yesterday. I heard people flying all over the place, going one place to another, getting away for the holidays, going to see people. But if you're in IT, taking that time off yourself gets challenging because all these people who are traveling need help. They're like, oh, wait a minute, I'm on the road. Where are my files? My laptop doesn't work. That's why we recommend GoToAssist from Citrix. Essential support tools, three essential support tools in one easy-to-use integrated cloud-based platform. GoToAssist remote support lets you provide live or unattended support to any PC, Mac, or mobile device from anywhere. So you could be in the freaking North Pole, as long as you can get internet connectivity, and manage all the devices everywhere anybody is. You can even manage them from your iPad, your Android device. There's a free app that lets you do that, and that lets you take some time away from the office and still be able to do your job. Plus, with GoToAssist monitoring, you actually can proactively identify issues before they become big problems, so you don't spend all your time off fixing stuff. You can easily keep track of all of it from the GoToAssist service desk. We use it here at Twit, and it does help out in making sure that we keep that stream online, we keep those servers booted. So sign up for your special 30-day free trial today. Visit GoToAssist.com. That's GoToAssist.com. Click on the Try It Free button and use the promo code TNT. That's GoToAssist.com, promo code TNT. We thank Citrix and GoToAssist for their support of Tech News Today. Also want to thank Scott Johnson for joining us today, host of The Instance, host of The Morning Stream, Autopilot Show, Film Sack. I'm not going to name it. You got too many shows. How's it going, Frog Pants, man?
I'm doing fine. Thanks for having me on, you guys. It's awesome to be here, and happy holidays to all of you. It's always good to hang out with you guys on a nice day like this where we all have a little break coming up and we can kind of chill out a little bit. And it's just a
Speak
thrill to
for
be
yourself,
on, as always.
Scott. I'm stressed as all get out.
True that.
She's busy procrastinating all her shopping until next Monday.
Fantastic.
That's a lot of work. Let's start off with this Twitter rolling out the option to download all your tweets. The Next Web reported it because of a guy on Twitter named Silosophy who said, hey, I was in my settings, and if you go all the way down, there's an option called Your Twitter Archive, and it's been verified with several users who've seen this, that Twitter will mail you a link to a zip file that contains HTML, CSV, and JSON versions of your entire history of Twitter postings in calendar format. In fact, Silosophy, the first guy that the Next Web saw who noticed this, was rather embarrassed in a later tweet about some of the things he had posted early in his reign on Twitter.
Oh, yeah. I mean, there are those services that have been around for a while, you know, where you can see, like, what was your first tweet type of thing. I mean, I actually just committed mine to memory, so it's like, that was a long time ago. I mean, that was, what, 2007, I think, is when I signed up for Twitter, and a lot has happened in 5 years.
I remember where I was when I posted my first Twitter
I remember
posting.
Too, yeah.
Yeah? Do you remember where I was?
No.
No, you remember where you were.
Right.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. But I mean,
that makes more sense.
But it's like the early days of Twitter were, you know, in many ways a lot of like, what are you eating? Or, you know, how are you feeling?
Well, it had the big question, what are you doing?
Right.
Right? It doesn't have that anymore.
No, but, no. And it's so much more about, I mean, at least the way I know that a lot of us use Twitter. I mean, it's information sharing and it's certainly very news-based to me. And, you know, if you get personal, you know, a lot of people are going to see it. It might be retweeted. And it's just the rules have changed quite a bit. I know for me, I was sometimes sort of like vaguely emo, and you could probably accuse me of still being that way, but I know I was a lot more back in the day because I thought it was kind of like, ooh, we're being Twitter coy. And that stuff is embarrassing to look at a few years later.
Yeah, well, now not everybody's going to see this yet. Twitter has confirmed that it's out there, but they're saying they're testing the ability with a very small percentage of users. So I haven't seen mine yet. But Scott, what would you do this if it shows up in your settings? And if so, why?
Yeah, I mean, when this was originally rumored not long ago, I thought this was kind of a cool idea. I don't think it's a bad idea to be able to do a little bit of personal social archaeology where you can kind of dig back into a thing, a tool that really has become such an important part of who I am and what I do. And I didn't think it was in 2007 when I signed up. So I thought in 07 this was going to be a silly throwaway thing, a fun way to maybe interact with a few fans. But nobody really had any idea of where it would go and what it would do. And I'm one of those guys that's changed his name once on there. It used to be, you know, this silly name I applied to everything, and I've changed it to my real name now. And I know some others have done that. It's become a really important tool in, for me to communicate with my audience. So I kind of want to go back and say, sure, what's embarrassing, or what did I think that month where that was now a significant month for me? What was I saying during that time? I wonder how far down the road people like me are, where I've got 30,000 plus tweets. I imagine the people getting it, well, I don't know that. I mean, there's nothing to base this on, but it seems interesting if people get it first, maybe they're ones with less tweets overall and it's less work for them. I mean, it's a huge archive. Think about the literally billions of tweets they've got to, you know, get into an archive somewhere. And it's not, and even though those are probably going to be small files, on the whole, at the large, these are, you know, this is a significant thing for Twitter to do. So I think it's a cool way to dig back and see what's what. I still wish they'd let us go back and easily find old tweets we wish we could delete and then delete them.
And delete them.
Yeah, that'd be nice. Other than that, though, I think this is a great idea. I'm excited to see what I've got in there.
Revisionist. I'm gonna revise your history.
Retcon, Tom. We got to retcon our lives.
Ayaz, what's this good for?
I'm thinking maybe when you want to actually export out of Twitter, a lot of people are complaining about all the changes to APIs. We can't reach our tweets anymore. If you can get all your tweets from day one and then put it somewhere else and go, look, yeah, this was originally written on Twitter, but at least I have it here as an archive. And they can effectively leave Twitter at that point if you wanted to. Because I know when I was looking at things like app.net or thinking about exporting out of Twitter entirely, I wanted to be able to still have that old post. And that was one of my favorite things about blogging systems. You can export out and you can import all your old things in. So it's almost like you've never left that one space. I think this might quiet some of those complaints, but apart from that, I kind of want to see when I started using hashtags for the first time and things that became official eventually. But you know that weird shift of how Twitter users made Twitter functions happen like officially after a while.
Yeah, I would do it for nostalgia. I mean, there's a legitimate data portability aspect to it, but I would probably do it mostly because I just want to see like things that I'd forgotten happened. Not what sandwich I ate in like July 2009, but just, you know, like, oh, right, when we took that trip and we did that thing that I forgot about.
Bill, it really seemed like the 140-character social network updating kind of traded places with blogging at a certain point. And blogging social networks are kind of a daily diary for so many people. It's a way to kind of log, you know, the inane and the totally, you know, who cares to the really important things in your life. I bet at some point somebody's going to make a coffee table book of all their tweets so that they could sit down
I have seen that.
Exactly. Yeah. And relive past 5 years of your life.
Steve Martin actually made an entire book of his tweets based on his tweets.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, well, Gina Trapani.
That's someone who's famous then.
But no, I've seen the coffee table thing as well.
Yeah.
Tom, you're keeping us hanging here. You said you knew where you were when you first tweeted. Where was that?
I was on the CNET stage at CES because Veronica Belmont had just run up and said, hey, have you signed on to Twitter? You got to try this thing out. And so I did.
And what'd you say?
I said, like, I'm at CES trying out Twitter. Like an idiot.
Trying out this Twitter thing.
Now, on the opposite from Twitter and preservation and saving your archives is Snapchat, which lets you not, you know, save what you're sending so that you can be maybe a little risky in the message you're sending. And Facebook wants to get into this game.
Yeah. So Snapchat, and please stop me if you guys talked about Snapchat last week.
We did not.
I wasn't on the show. Okay. This is dubbed by some as the sexting app because it's a way for... I was about to say for me to send Ayaz something. That, like, you know what? That's because I always use you as an example. And this just isn't the time for that.
No, inappropriate.
I would send
HR
a photo to someone else that doesn't work here. And I could say something like, okay, I want this image to be live for 5 seconds or 9 seconds or 12 seconds. Very short period of time. At which point, the photo self-destructs. Now, the person who is the recipient of that could take a screenshot, but then I am alerted that they took a screenshot. So there's a little bit of the whole idea is, you know, it's sort of almost like a phone call. Are people secretly recording phone calls? You're certainly not supposed to.
The CIA is.
Well, right. But between two people, it's sort of like, if you were there, you were there. And that, you know, it's not something to be preserved and put into a photo album later. Snapchat, I mean, a lot of people say, well, that's just stupid. You know, this is just something that kids are doing and they're being risque about it. They're sending each other, you know, sexy stuff in class, that sort of thing. Benchmark Capital, according to GigaOm, is about to lead an $8 million venture round for Snapchat, which would put the company at about a $50 million valuation. So people are definitely taking this seriously, and it sounds like Facebook is one of those companies. All Things D is reporting that Facebook is testing their own version of a Snapchat, a standalone app that would do roughly the same thing. You send an image. It doesn't get archived anywhere. It doesn't go into a particular folder. It's something that's live for a brief period of time, and then it goes away.
Isn't that the opposite of what Facebook does? They archive everything. They put it in a timeline. They build a big, big, huge data pile that they can sell to advertisers.
Yes, they do. But Facebook also really likes to take technology that is popular and make their own version of it and see what sticks. You know, they've got Facebook Messenger, which has turned out really well. I mean, I remember that was sort of the answer to Beluga back in the day, where it's like, hey, why are we all using SMS? Why don't we just use our data plans to send messages back and forth to each other? They've got Facebook Camera in addition to Instagram. And then, of course, they have Instagram. They also are now allowing non-Facebook users to be sending each other messages via the Facebook Android app. So Facebook is certainly got its hands in all sorts of different technologies. I don't know what you guys think, but it sounds like to me, Snapchat is kind of hot right now. It's a new technology and people are talking about it because, you know, half of us don't quite understand it and the other half are like, it's the future. You know, it's sort of this disposable messaging, you know, visual messaging. And I don't know, it sounds like it's Facebook saying, hey, let's steal some market share early on if we can.
Definitely does seem odd. Like, Tom, you were just, I don't know if you were saying it in jest, but Facebook does keep everything all the time.
Do you trust that they're going to get rid of it?
That's the other thing, right? Because Snapchat deletes things off the server. Now, how long is it going to stay on Facebook? Who's going to trust them with that? But then again, they got a billion users. They have like so many different functions at this point. I think it's kind of strange that Facebook keeps building separate apps outside the Facebook app. If they want to have this separate thing, what was that, Scott?
I was just going to say that I think the only reason they may make this a standalone app is to answer that very issue, which is if this made this part of the Facebook app, which right now is a fairly robust app for what it's intended to do, and it's highly integrated into iOS and works great on other platforms, and they've come that far with that app and made it such a flagship that including something like this as part of that app would freak people out a little bit because, again, you're talking about a culture that wants to archive everything, but this one little feature doesn't. So doing it as a standalone app, maybe that's their way of saying, you know, here's this little thing that's going to run on its own, and they'll even market it that way and say, look, this thing's separate. You know, we own it, we run it, but that's not included in your timeline. None of this stuff's connected to that. It's just this funky, funny little thing to do and call it good. I feel like that if there's a reason to make it separate, then maybe you just described the reason.
Do not trust that anything ever transmitted over the internet is gone forever. Mm-hmm. That would be my own. I mean, I'm not saying that Snapchat is lying. I'm not even saying that Facebook is untrustworthy in this particular case. I think it's easy to blame Facebook for a lot of things, but stuff that's transmitted digitally has a way of turning up when you didn't want it to. It also disappears when you don't want it to disappear, which is why you need to do backups. But
the Snapchat thing is very interesting to me because you know how there will be technology, and we were talking about Twitter a minute ago where it's like, well, in the early days of Twitter, nobody really thought that it had legs. And Snapchat is definitely one of those services where I'm like, am I finally old enough so I just don't get it?
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm trying.
Oh, I get it.
I understand how it works.
Yeah.
I just don't get the draw.
I don't do the things anymore that you would do to take advantage of that.
Anymore? All right, Tom.
Or any less. Let's quickly jump to HTC and their large Windows phone. Why are they abandoning it?
Okay.
Those heathens.
Bloomberg was reporting, as Sarah mentioned, that HTC scrapped plans to produce a large screen Windows phone because it doesn't support resolutions as high as Android. That means HTC's got to stick to Android if they want to go above 720p. Windows Phone 8, by the way, supports three different resolutions, 800 by 480, 1280 by 768, and 1280 by 720. Also in that report, though, HTC concluded that a larger screen Windows Phone 8 wouldn't be competitive against Android devices from HTC, Samsung, and others. So maybe it's not just the display. It's just the fact that, well, it's a larger device. Doesn't mean it's going to do very well. I guess this made me wonder. The Galaxy Note 2 uses a 720p display just fine. It's a 5.5-inch display, actually. It does fine. It sold over 3 million units. Is this just a bunch of nonsense from HTC, Scott? Or should Microsoft be rushing to support higher-res displays? Because that'll give OEMs more choice.
I don't understand why they don't. Well, I don't understand why they don't support it. I mean, don't the RT displays and some of the other touch Windows 8 stuff that's like hybrid stuff, that stuff's supporting higher resolutions than 720p.
That's Windows and 8. This is Windows Phone 8.
True, but it, I mean, at the core, well, I'm speaking to stuff I don't know. But it just seems to me that if they're going to have that ecosystem be jiving with each other as much as they claim it will, then that ought to be something they would take care of. But that aside, it's a weird thing to base your decision on as a manufacturer, to be able to say, yeah, they don't support the resolution we want, so we're going to scrap all plans for this phone. That to me says more something like, we're not so sure this phone will do what we need it to do to justify costs, R&D, and everything else that goes into it, so we are not going to make a Windows phone now, or at least not one based on these specs that's this robust or whatever. It's going to cost us this much to manufacture. This feels like a weird cop-out to me because that resolution is fine. I mean, it's nice to have more options, and I don't know that it would take Microsoft that much work to revise it. That seems like an easy thing for them to say, yeah, we've bumped it to 1080p. So I don't buy it. I think there's something funky going on there.
Tom, you're not a resolution snob. Would you have an issue with the 720p inch?
Well, did HTC say they're never making any other Windows phones, or they just said they're not going to make this big model that they had planned into a Windows phone?
HTC officially said nothing, right? So Bloomberg's reporting this.
Right. So first of all, we don't even know what HTC is up to, but let's take Bloomberg at their word. HTC probably looked at this phone and said, you know what, at that size, it just doesn't look good enough, and we're behind in this game. So, you know, instead of putting out another phone that we're like, it's probably good enough, we really need to put out only good phones. At that size of a phone, I can see them saying, you know, it needs to be higher resolution. And that's not picking on Windows Phone 8. It's just making a good quality control decision.
Well, I wonder if Microsoft's going to hear this report or see this report and go, look, okay, if this is an excuse, we have to do something, because Microsoft can't wait around for companies to go, oh, yeah, we'll take a chance on you. They've got to do everything possible to get on every single manufacturer's phones so they can build
market share. But HTC's making others Windows phones.
Oh, yes, they're the partner with the 8X. Yeah.
Let's take a quick break and thank our sponsor, ShareFile. All familiar with the frustrations of bounce backs when emailing? Yeah, file's too big. Can't send it that way. Okay, how do I do it? Maybe I'll put it up, you know, post it somewhere on the way. It's confidential. It's a confidential file. I don't want to just put it anywhere. And you know what? I might want to have access to it when I'm out of the office, but I only want me to have access to it when I'm out of the office. Well, that's where ShareFile by Citrix comes in. It's the best way to send, share, and receive files of almost any size, because it was designed for business. With ShareFile, every file stays under your control, so you know it's secure. You manage who has access. You manage how long they have access. If they don't get it in a week, I don't want them to see it. You can set those parameters. You can see when they opened them. You can see who opened them if you've shared it with more than one person. Plus, ShareFile allows you to access files from any computer or mobile device, no matter what industry you're in. ShareFile can be customized for your company's specific needs. Believe me, I've mentioned this before. I have used that who opened it when to make sure that the person that I needed to get a confidential file had, in fact, looked at it when they said they looked at it. That's a valuable thing to have right there. This is why ShareFile is worth looking into. So go try it today. Sign up with our special offer, a full 30-day free trial. Go to ShareFile.com, click on the radio microphone, and enter TNT. Remember, visit ShareFile.com, type in TNT. We thank Citrix and ShareFile for their support of Tech News Today. Back to the discussion, and New York Times reporting that Kevin Systrom made a verbal agreement to sell to Twitter for $525 million in March. Then changed his mind on March 20th, said, you know what? No, I want to stay independent. Then, of course, as we all know, about a month later, he agreed to sell to Facebook for what was then a deal worth $1 billion. So to speed up regulation in August, he sat down in front of the California Corporations Department and told them, quote, we talked to other parties, but never received any formal offers from anybody else. They asked him again, and he replied, we never received any formal offers or term sheets. Now, if he just had a conversation at a restaurant over dinner with somebody and
said, would be true.
Then he's answering correctly. Sources say he was, in fact, shown a term sheet at a restaurant. He didn't want to meet in the offices, but he handed the term sheet back and told the Twitter representative to hold on to it while he thought about it over the weekend. So what's going on here is it looks like Systrom is by the letter saying exactly the truth. Mm-hmm. But trying to make it sound as if he never entertained any offers when he, in fact, did. Twitter was never given the chance to counter Facebook's offer. At least that's what the sources tell Nick Bilton. So the California Corporations Department is sitting here saying, look, we haven't seen any complaints filed. Nobody's submitted anything saying that the testimony was wrong or anything. So there's nothing we're going to do about it until something like that happens. But Sarah, $1 billion versus $525 million, would it have been better as an open auction, would it have changed anything if he had gone back to Twitter?
Oh, it's hard to say. I mean, if assuming that, you know, from what we know of how the Facebook acquisition went down, I think Kevin Systrom went over to Mark Zuckerberg's house and they kind of sat around all night and hashed out something. And it was kind of like happened really quickly. And $1 billion is very hard to say no to. I'm sure staying independent didn't sound as good.
I wouldn't know, but I would imagine.
You would think that it sounds pretty good. But if that indeed there was no overlap, so there, you know, if Twitter came to Instagram and said, we want to buy you for $500 million, what do you say? And Kevin Systrom is just being careful and saying, I don't want to even be in possession of anything. I want to keep a clear head and I want to probably, you know, get some advice from other people. And I've decided, no, we're not interested in this right now. And the Facebook acquisition truly was separate and later on. I don't think we have much of a problem here. But Twitter, I mean, they're not in the business of highballing for no reason, right?
Yeah.
If they were willing to offer $500 million, then maybe they would have come up.
I could see if I'm Twitter being upset at this, and I could see this causing bad blood. Let's, you know, this sort of thing's coming out now in the press, but my guess is Twitter knew obviously they knew, if this is true, mm-hmm. that they had offered him something and he had kind of brushed them off and then taken $1 billion from Facebook. And maybe they were like, yeah, we could have matched that offer. We could have talked to him, but he just shut us out. He wouldn't take serious meetings in an office. On the other side of that, Systrom's an M&A guy.
Like, it's not illegal to say, no, I'm not interested in Twitter owning me.
But it might not be nice, right?
Well, but I mean, okay. So business isn't nice.
Now we're getting to why Twitter and Instagram seem to be butting heads. Like, well, we're not going to allow your pictures to show up. And Instagram's saying, well, great. Well, we don't want our pictures to show up. Scott, does it make any difference to the consumers? Is that the upshot here? Is that we've got, you know, the big guys fighting, and so we lose the ability to have Instagram photos embedded in our Twitter streams?
Well, their weird bad blood that they've had over the last few months has affected users. I mean, it used to be a really convenient thing for me to go into that app and say, show me all my Twitter followers that also have this. And it was a great way to find people and discover people. And to have that gone was really irritating. It's difficult to say whether this deal directly affected that souring of the milk, or if the souring of the milk came from just some other weird bad blood. Like, I feel like there's a story here we don't know, like some kind of something that went down between these guys. I mean, it's been known for a while that Twitter's taking a lot of hard stances right now on how they let their service be used. They're, you know, cutting their API down, giving people less hooks and functionality and usability from a programming standpoint. So in the end, this trickles down to users. I don't necessarily blame Twitter for taking sort of a stauncher stand on the things they do, because they've still got to figure out a way to make money, remain relevant, and have Twitter, whatever comes and blows up from Twitter, they want to be able to have the things that blow up from that. They don't want everyone else benefiting from the fact that it's their service they're piggybacking on. I kind of get that, but I think it's bad when other services that are strong and are so tied to things like Twitter get pushed around like this. So I don't know whether it's a chicken and egg thing. Did this deal falling apart come first? Did it come later? Either way, I think that bad blood, to answer your question, is bad for us as users ultimately.
Is it just business, though, I guess?
I mean, it seems like it. I mean, the fact is this guy is under oath and answering these questions and saying we don't have an offer or formal offer at that point. There's lots of – it just seems strange that he wouldn't mention that Twitter had done anything. Unless Twitter was saying, hey, we'll buy it for $500 million, and they're just like shouting it across a room or something, where it doesn't seem like, okay, you can't be serious about that. But if there was truly a negotiation, I'm just kind of curious why Systrom would – well, maybe is he lying under oath? That's a big problem. I'm assuming he's not, because he's probably well-coached. If you're being bought for $700 million, I'm sure you got a lawyer somewhere going – make sure you do.
Well, he's an M&A guy. He knows what he's doing. I mean, this is not Systrom making a mistake. He's treading a line carefully. I guess the major question is, why would he want to tread that line? And my guess is I think from reading this, he really just decided that $500 million wasn't enough yet. Remember, Mark Zuckerberg did that to Yahoo. He's like, no, I am not selling Facebook for $1 billion to Yahoo. I'm going to keep it independent. Systrom, I think, had that happen. And then And that's why he carefully only met in restaurants, because he just wasn't sure he wanted to sell. This is all my guess. And then when Facebook came along and Zuckerberg wooed him and gave him $1 billion, he went for it. He said, well, you know what? I'm convinced now. And so now
that magic number has convinced me. This is a great idea, and there's an incentive to get it pushed through.
Oh crap! But Twitter's going to be so pissed at me, so I got to be careful how I do this and what I say from now on.
Yeah,
that's my impression of this. Let's talk about Nielsen and Twitter. Twitter's not mad at Nielsen because Nielsen and Twitter are partnering up on gauging television engagement.
Yeah, what they're calling it, the definitive reach metric for social TV audience measurement and analytics. Yeah, that's PR speak, because that means Nielsen and Twitter are working together for this Nielsen Twitter TV rating. And under the agreement, Nielsen and Twitter are going to have a standard metric around the reach of a television conversation on Twitter. It's going to start in 2013 in the fall. It's going to be in addition to Nielsen's existing ratings, so it's not replacing the official Nielsen ratings. It's just another version of it. And it says Nielsen says it's going to help TV networks and advertisers gauge real-time metrics required to understand TV audience. So this is all PR speak for saying we got a new metric when it comes to how people look at the television. And in November, Nielsen actually acquired a company called Social Guide, a company that measured social media buzz around TV shows. So they were looking at Twitter. But this is an official partnership with Twitter to create a new metric.
They're getting the fire hose.
Yeah. So, Tom, what do you think this means for Nielsen? And does this mean much for online television? A little bit more, we'll see a different look at the way we go, okay, this rating's really great, and we can add Twitter to this.
Yeah, I don't know that it changes the consumer view of things. We're going to know like the top rated show, and it's going to be the old rating that everybody's familiar with. I don't think it's going to change that. This is supplementary information for advertisers, because advertisers and television producers are very fascinated with that second screen. They want to crack that. They want to figure out how to get the people who are holding a mobile phone or a tablet while they watch to use the app that they want to sell advertising into that app, and to get them to be more engaged with their show so they watch it more and they tell their friends about it. The thing that I'm questioning is, do we want any of that stuff? And what this points to me is Nielsen has realized, well, wait a minute, what people are doing with that second screen is Twitter. They're not doing apps. They're not doing Into Now. They're not doing special websites that television shows create. They're going on Twitter and they're talking about it. So let's measure that. And I think in that sense, it's a smart thing.
Well, algorithmically, I mean, they're going to scour Twitter and they're going to pull out this data from all their comments. So here's me on a day going, oh, man, I love the fourth episode of Firefly. What a great thing that was. Well, it's a show that's not even on the air anymore. And Nielsen technically doesn't care about that. But now they have data. And that data may show a whole bunch of people tweeting about the fourth episode of Firefly. Well, what do they do with that? I don't know. But it's even more, you know, relevant when it's a show people are watching now. So somebody's watching Homeland and they're freaking out about mid-season, then they can see people doing, and they're not going, oh, and by the way, and part of my 140 characters, I'm really loving Homeland season 3, episode 1. I watched it on my iPad, and it was a file that I torrented, and I got it from my buddy Fred. They're not telling them all that info. They're just saying, I really like Homeland. It seems like you could do some interesting work with that data, because now you've got stuff outside of the normal Nielsen system, outside of the normal cable system that you didn't have before, and you can see sleeper hits from a different angle. You can see kind of grassroots viewership that isn't happening on network TV. It's happening on some other device through some other way. I think that's really fascinating. I'm not saying it's going to change the world, but anytime you can dig into data like that and come up with some interesting results, I think that's great.
I think what we'll end up with is stats that say the most tweeted event, which we already hear from Twitter, is not going to have a Nielsen rating attached to it. Like, the top rated engagement episode this year was the Super Bowl, and that's what it's going to be.
Yeah, I wonder if it'll decouple the second screen feature, though. Like, that's usually like a live thing. You're sitting there, you're attached to it. Twitter, I mean, I tweet things when I'm watching a show on demand. So like Scott was saying, this idea that maybe, I don't know, I'm thinking maybe cord cutters will be taken a little bit, not more seriously, but their numbers will be shown a little bit better because they're not necessarily watching things at the same time everybody else is. You're getting it on a download from any other source. Maybe that's going to change the way we see ads on these things, giant hashtags for whatever.
And we're already seeing hashtags all over the place.
Yeah, I'm broadcasting.
Let's finish up with 2 million iPhones in China. Can't be wrong.
Yeah, well, it was the big opening weekend. Went on sale on Friday. And depending who you read, this is either sort of a a modest weekend for the iPhone 5 in China, or a really, really good one. You can think of it as in terms of all of the people in China who could possibly buy an iPhone 5. Well, 2 million isn't much at all.
That's hardly nothing.
That's hardly nothing. And it's not, you know, it's not the same as the iPhone 5 launch in the U.S. opening weekend, for example. So what does it all mean? Anyway, Apple announced that it sold 2 million iPhone 5s, which is the first kind of interesting thing, because Apple has never issued a press release for something like this in China before. So this is new. This is something that they were touting. They were excited about it. Before the weekend, analysts were vocally skeptical of there being good numbers to come out of this. There were rumors of supply chain order cuts, which would indicate that Apple didn't think that it needed to make as many iPhones for the Chinese market. Topeka's Brian White today sent a note to clients. This is a firm pointing out that this is that post-China, it's Apple's first post-China launch press release. So that's interesting. And also noted, and this is something I hadn't really thought about before either, Chinese New Year begins on February 10th, and shopping season is more like January rather than the holidays, at least in the U.S. So if you think about it in terms of January might see a big iPhone 5 push, this might not be the peak of the iPhones that are being sold in a short period of time. It's a really good opening for a first weekend, you know, all things considered, but it might continue to see strong sales. ISI's Brian Marshall said, these numbers are really good, especially when you consider that 3G service in China is pretty spotty. I mean, you've got a lot of folks who have access to smartphones, and the 3G thing is just not strong in China so far. So that shows that the iPhone 5 is and very expensive for a lot of Chinese consumers. iPhone 5 is still a tech status object,
right? You know,
something that people want, even if it doesn't make the most sense as far as convenience and coverage and service reach. What do you guys think? Does 2 million seem like a strong showing for an iPhone 5?
Well, it's a chunk of, I mean, that's a chunk of phones, I think, by any measure, but also it's proportionally perhaps smaller than you'd expect in here in the West, obviously. I mean, 2 million phones with a 300 million population is a lot different than 2 million phones in a place where there's a billion people or something near that. So I don't know. But I know that companies like, you know, Blizzard is a good example. We talk about this on The Instance all the time. For them to get their games into the Chinese market is crucial to them and their bottom line. But they have to do things so differently to get people interested in them there. The way people pay for them is very different. They don't pay monthly. They pay sort of piecemeal, by item. They do things in a way that would not fly here, at least right now in the current gaming culture. I have to imagine that for Apple to sell well, have their handset sell well in a country that technically manufactured it, I just think there's probably other stuff at play. There's other culture at play. There's other ways of thinking about phones there than just the way we do here, which is Android, Apple, and to a lesser extent, Windows phones. And geez, what happened to the Palm Pre? And, you know, the kind of pattern and path that phones have taken here, very different over there. My time over there was, I spent about a week in China. And the weirdest thing the thing I thought was most interesting while I was there was that, like, you don't have a carrier the way we have them here. Oftentimes, an entire city, especially in the factory towns, would have like a big container, like a truck container from a ship, plopped down in the middle of town, and in there would be transmitters and antennas that would service a certain radius of people to give them cell coverage. And oftentimes, that the company who owned that container would change week to week, and you never knew if you're going to have service or not. A lot of that stuff has improved and changed. But I just have to think that this is not the, it's just can't be the same kind of market. So knowing all of that and knowing that it still did 2 million units in sales, I think that's pretty strong considering all those other factors that kind of weird things up a little bit.
And I think you're seeing that in response, at least in the stock price and the analysts sort of changing their tune about Apple's future because they did good enough in this situation.
And gosh darn it, people like them.
Yeah, that's right. Let's move on to the randomizer.
Randomizer.
IBM does a yearly 5 in 5 list where they try to make 5 predictions about where technology will be in 5 years. And this year's list is getting a lot of attention because they predict computers with sight, hearing, taste, smell, and touch. Did you guys see this?
I watched all the videos. There's a little intro video explaining this bizarre concept, and then you go into this. I thought the touch one was the most understandable, at least for me. The idea that your phone would vibrate a pattern so you could actually know the difference between, like, a silk shirt that you wanted to try out or a burlap shirt. Or I don't know, why would you have a burlap shirt? But the thing is, let's say that's a new fashion thing, but the idea that you could feel through your phone, that made a lot of sense. The idea that these things could smell wine, I was like, that's intriguing. This cognitive computing.
Can they tell if it's good?
That would be part of the cognitive computing aspect. It's really intriguing to see that IBM thinks we'll have it in 5 years and we'll be able to use our phones to do all this stuff.
Scott, did you take a look at any of this stuff?
Yeah, it looks pretty, that's pretty neat. Yeah, that kind of stuff blows my mind. I love this kind of stuff. This is, if you ask me, this is the hot tech news story of today. I think that's pretty rad.
There's absolutely no substance. Well, there's some substance in as far as research. There's not a product you can go pick up off the shelf from this. But I'm a sucker for this kind of thing.
Well, it's another chance for computers to do a thing that humans, you know, are tied to a lot of emotion for humans. I mean, I'd like to be able to stick my arm. This sounds crazy, but stick my arm in a computer and have that thing, I don't know, taste my arm and give me a better diagnosis than some, you know, some middle-aged doctor who's
your
not up on the list.
Your arm tastes a little measly. Do you have measles?
Yeah. So. Right. Whatever it takes. And they're not going to be offended by whatever your weird smells are. They'll just go beep, boop, and
no
give you
bedside matter, though. Really.
Sure.
Or you could set it to, you know, if it smelled you and said, Sarah, you really should shower before you go to brunch with your friends. No judgment. You've told me to be truthful, and that's the truth.
It won't unlock your door.
Right. All right, let's take a quick break and thank our other sponsor for today's show, Audible. If you haven't tried Audible, you gotta get it. This is one of the best ways to increase your reading time. If you're like me, you've been like, I have so many good books I want to read. How do I fit them all in? Audible fits in books in times when you would not be able to read otherwise. When you're driving, when you're doing chores, when you're like taking the dogs for a walk. And this episode brought to you by Audible.com, the leading provider of audiobooks with more than 100,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature, including fiction, nonfiction, and periodicals. I want to point out that they have so many good books on here, but The Hobbit is on there. And what's great about The Hobbit, it's an excellent narration. It's an excellent read. And they sing the songs. It's narrated by Rob Inglis. So if you're one of those people who maybe is a purist and didn't really, you know, like the changes that Peter Jackson made in the movie, go get The Hobbit. You can get it for free at audiblepodcast.com/TNT and read the original Tolkien stuff with the songs sung to you. That's something you can't get. Well, you can. You'd have to sing them yourself if you read it otherwise. So check it out, audiblepodcast.com/TNT to download a free audiobook of your choice, any book you want that they have there, audiblepodcast.com/TNT. And a second free book, Brandon Sanderson's Legion, absolutely free at audible.com/Sanderson. No trial or credit card required for that. That's audible.com/Sanderson. We thank Audible for their support of Tech News Today. I've been waiting a week to say this. Sarah, what's on the calendar?
Oh, Tom, I'm so glad I could pull through for you. Rogers Communications in Canada has some good news for BlackBerry 10. Lovers or future lovers says its current wireless customers can place orders for BlackBerry 10 devices starting today, December 17th, although they're not giving out any details on pricing or availability or specifications until the new year. So you're kind of going on a feeling. Instagram has debuted a new privacy policy. In fact, it's something I saw when I loaded up my feed this morning. It was right up at the top. Basically, sharing user data with Facebook is going to start January 16th. Not a huge surprise, but it is happening. Oracle is announcing earnings tomorrow. That's December 18th. And RIM will host its BlackBerry 10 launch event in New York City on January 30th.
Let's see what's incoming.
Incoming message.
We've got an email from Tom. He says, hey, TNT crew, as a European, I find it very interesting that all those pro-internet companies and organizations against this ITU thing are from the U.S., and the U.S. is currently the one who practically controls major parts of the internet and exerts that power all around the world. I'm not sure that the internet controlled by ITU or its member states would be such a worse place for non-U.S. citizens. The U.S. government regularly shuts down websites all around the world directly or indirectly through big economical influence on other governments, and I have yet to see a single issue where the Chinese or any other government prevented me from accessing a single website. As a global netizen, I wonder how are you okay with promoting the status quo where interests of big companies from a single country are put ahead ahead of the rights of the citizens all around the world.
No, good perspective from Tom. I think my opinion on the entire ITA thing was not that the U.S. should continue to leave things as it is, but that this was not the proper place to have that conversation. I do think that there should be a non-governmental, non-national administration of the internet. And Tom brings up a great point of why that should happen, because the United States does go around shutting off domain names, because so many domain names are registered in the United States. And that does affect places outside the world. On the other hand, what was happening in this world treaty was that they were trying to put in a lot of situations that would change the way the internet worked fundamentally right now. And I 100% oppose that. And I 100% back Europe, Canada, the United States, and all the other countries that said, you know what, we did not agree to have this conversation here. We want to update telecommunication regulations. On the other hand, the countries that did sign the treaty now get these great roaming agreements and freedom from spam, apparently. So maybe we'll regret it.
Got another email from another Tom. I think it's a different Tom. Tom McCurdy says, I was listening to episode 648 of Tech News Today when I heard mention of NORAD's Santa Tracker. During the conversation, you stated that a company called Cesium is doing the 3D maps. Just to clarify, Cesium is not a company, but rather an open source JavaScript library for creating 3D globes and 2D maps in a web browser. The project was created and maintained by the company I work for, Analytical Graphics Inc., or AGI. I've included a couple links to AGI's main site, where you'll find the reference to NORAD Santa Tracker and our Cesium site. He does include a couple links. AGI.com will take you straight to AGI's website, and Cesium's website is cesium.agi.com.
Thanks, Tom. Yeah. That's cool. You guys are doing a great job with that. And that is it for this episode of Tech News Today. Scott Johnson, as always, thank you so much for joining us. Always enjoy listening to The Instance and how Dills is spending all the gold he won off of me, redoing engineering.
Yeah. Another year down, another baseball team lost, another chance for Tom to give his gold to another hunter, and worked out really well for us. Things are going really great on the network. Tons of stuff going on. Man, I don't even know where to start. But people can find everything we got going on right now at frogpants.com. We're sort of in the thick of planning this year's Nerdtacular event for all the fans. So that's looking cool. We'll have announcements on that soon. Best way to kind of keep track of me is on Twitter. It's Scott Johnson. And I just want to wish all the twit side of my life a happy holidays, because it's so fun coming on here, doing the occasional thing. With Twit has always been a fun thing for me in 2012, and glad to have a good year with you guys. So thanks a lot.
Thank you, man. And thanks for all your contributions to Tech News Today throughout the year, too.
You bet.
That's it for us. You can find our subreddit at technewstoday.reddit.com. That's the place to go to let us know what stories you might want to hear us talk about on the show. We look at it every day. You can also find us on the web at twit.tv/TNT. You can email us, tnt@twit.tv, or give us a call. Leave us a voicemail, 260-TNT Show. Little France flashback for Sarah tomorrow. Patrick Beja joins us. We'll see you then.
Wait.